Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I tell you what, those of you early risers who join us for the 6 o'clock hour of the show, but then maybe aren't able to always stick around for maybe the 8 o'clock or the 9 o'clock hours of Montana Talks, now you know exactly what you're missing out on, man. I was trying to do some more show prep here during the 6 o'clock hour. I'm all set up here at the Heritage Inn in Great Falls for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association annual meeting. Folks are already gathering around having coffee and breakfast here, and we'll have some folks join us live here later this morning. But I was trying to do show prep, but I was having too much fun listening to the phone calls from later in the day yesterday, listening into the Joker from Twitter who joined us later in the day yesterday, and, of course, wrapping up the hour with Perry the Poet in Columbus. That was great. But, hey, you heard us last hour talk about the debate two nights ago between Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy and Liberal Senator John Tester. But let's talk about last night's debate, the vice presidential candidate debate between Ohio Senator J.D. Vance and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. We've got Tim and Savage. Tim Tharp, our Mondakistan correspondent, as we like to call him. I'm on the road in Great Falls, but I've got him on the phone lines here. Tim, are you hearing me okay there?
Yeah, I got you 5x5.
Hey, perfect. Yeah, it's always a little crazy when I'm doing a remote broadcast. But, hey, thanks for being with us. And, man, I was busy traveling, had meetings last night here with our co-op friends. So I watched part of the debate, but not all of it. What stood out to you in this VP debate last night?
Well, if I had to characterize it, it was varsity versus C-Squad. I mean, J.D. Vance just completely demolished Tim Walz. He was totally outclassed at every point. One thing, if you had the sound off and just watching it, J.D. Vance calmly talking to the camera, answering his questions, and then politely, respectfully turning toward toward Walz and listening to him during his comments. But then you watch Walz, he's frantic. He's stare at the camera and then snap his head, turning completely to his side, staring at Vance, and then frantically slamming his head back down and then scribbling out notes and just constantly, and it just, he just looked frantic and harried the whole time. And that was not leadership. I mean, he looked like he was just scared and ready to wet his pants at some of these things. He just was not calm and relaxed in answering the questions.
We were grabbing a bite to eat downtown Great Falls, and I saw a Fox News alert come in, and they described a visibly shaky Walz, who, you know, struggled to get his footing very early on in the debate. But yeah, when I finally caught in, I think the second half of the debate, I finally turned it on and on the TV, and it was like, yeah, he had the crazy eyes look going the whole time. And it was nonstop. It was just like it's like his face was frozen with that big frown and then the crazy eyes look for the entire debate. But when you listen to him talk, he was trying to come off as a nice guy. He was trying to sound agreeable with J.D. Vance. But yeah, J.D. Vance was just solid, connected with the audience, showed I think really the human side of J.D. Vance. And even CNN and MSNBC are freaking out at such a what a great performance J.D. Vance did. All right, Tim in Savage with us for a few more minutes. We'll get more of his take on the debate right after this.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Congress did not include a batch of funding to respond to natural disasters in the spending bill approved last week. Many lawmakers pushed for the inclusion of that provision. But lawmakers did make sure that FEMA can spend down its coffers more quickly to respond to Helene. FEMA's Disaster Relief Fund, or DRF, has sufficient money to respond to immediate needs in the aftermath of Helene. That means FEMA has enough money to provide food and medicine to those who need it. However, it's likely that a storm of this magnitude will require a supplemental tranche of money down the line. It will take weeks, if not months, to determine how much is necessary. Congress was already wrestling with additional money to the recent spending package to address tornadoes which spun through Iowa and the wildfires last year in Hawaii. Lawmakers must now include money for those crises and Helene in the next spending plan due December 20th. Ironically, one of the reasons Congress left town 2 days early was to accommodate members from Florida and elsewhere in the South ahead of Helene. They didn't want to be mired in Washington. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Here's a look at your real weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunshine across the region for today. High temperature readings will range from the lower 70s in Bozeman to the upper 70s in the Billings area. For tonight, clear and quiet. Mid-30s in Bozeman, around 40 in Billings. And then on Thursday, with more sunshine, temperatures cool off into the mid-60s for highs. Clear and quiet Thursday night. That's a look at your real weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Look, we've got the most important U.S. Senate race in the country here in Montana. And you're seeing what the TV stations are putting out. You already saw what the major newspapers are putting out. A bunch of fake news media that's just propping up liberal Senator John Tester and doing whatever they can to be biased against Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy. Here's the deal. Facebook doesn't want you to see the truth. Google doesn't want you to see the truth. If you want to get our Montana Talks content that we're delivering, download the app on your smartphone. You don't see.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your. Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I'll tell you what, I got several great messages that came in on our Montana Talks app earlier this morning. In fact, and then some messages that came in last night while many of you were watching the vice presidential candidate debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. Let me see here. Actually, one of them came in from Tim and Savage. I think this one was about 8 o'clock last night. Sometimes it's just the guns. Tim Walz believes that the guns themselves cause violence. Tim and Savage with us on the phone lines right now. Yeah, Tim, walk us through that back and forth between Vance and Walz.
Well, I think that was at one point during the debate where I just think that Vance just showed his compassion and just did an amazing job. Because now we don't know if it's true or not. I don't have any idea. But Walz made a comment that his son witnessed a shooting, not a school shooting, but he witnessed something there. And Vance just genuinely concerned and said, "I am so sorry that your son had to go through that traumatic." And it was genuine. It wasn't a political posturing or BS. You saw genuine concern one man to another man about the trauma that his son had seen. And so I thought that was very touching to see that side of JD. But they're talking about, of course, it's gun violence. All of my guns, they sit safely downstairs in the vault, and they have not committed a single act of violence. They just sit there until I need them. And so I don't, but the left just keeps wanting to blame it's gun violence. And JD kept kind of come back and say, this is violence. And the fact is, it's not legal gun ownership. You're going after all of these restrictions and laws and these things you want to ban. It's not the legal guns. It's all of the illegally obtained guns. And JD did a great job, kept tying things back to the illegal immigration and saying, this is the cartels coming across the border. This is the open border. This is all of the illegals and bringing those illegal weapons into the U.S. People aren't getting shot up by legally owned firearms, that people who went through the legal background checks. They're being shot up from these illegal ones that are being sold for drugs on the streets and out of the trunks of cars. And so I think he did a really good job with that. But Walz just kept coming back, and then he's trying to justify it. He just was word salad. I mean, that's why he fits so good with Kamala, because neither one of them knows what the hell they're talking about. But the word salad kept coming around, and then at one point he said, sometimes it's just the gun. Okay, it's not the violence, it's not the poverty, it's not the inner city drugs and all of that sort of stuff. It's just the gun.
It's not the 600,000 convicts, illegal alien non-citizen convicts that are still likely roaming around this country because of open borders. Yeah, crazy. Our producer Travis snagged that audio clip for us. Travis, roll that specific soundbite for us.
And I think what we end up doing is we start looking for a scapegoat. Sometimes it just is the guns. It's just the guns, and there are things that you can do about it.
All right, there you go. By the way, the Trump War Room, that's where we found that specific soundbite. The Trump War Room added this after playing that sometimes it's just the gun soundbite from Tim Walz. Spoken like a guy who has visited China 30 times. That's what the Trump War Room had to say in response. But, Tim, that point that you made about J.D. Vance showing his human side, you know, because he's such a serious guy. You know, he's a Marine Corps veteran, served in Iraq, Yale Law School grad. We won't hold that against him, right? But this guy grew up in abject poverty. His mom was addicted to opioids. And this guy is a survivor. And you actually, I think, you watched the movie Hillbilly Elegy. I watched the movie. You may have even read the book as well. But that's the human side of J.D. Vance that came out last night. And I think that was what Martha McCallum said immediately after the debate is the Hillbilly Elegy side of J.D. Vance is what really showed last night.
Yeah, it was powerful. I mean, I read the book and then I watched the movie afterwards. And you take an 8 to 10 hour book and try to condense it to a 90-minute movie. I mean, there's so much that you're missing out on. And if you don't have time to read, get it on Audible. It's worth it. But from the very first time, you know, as soon as I heard about he's the nominee, I Googled him, found the book, listened to it. And I mean, I just fell in love with the guy. He has such a compelling story and he is a survivor. He's not coming up with this garbage. Well, I grew up in a middle class home, blah, blah, blah. He truly was in the worst of poverty. And he talked about it a little bit last night. He said that there's times that his grandma went into deep medical debt just to put food on the table. So he doesn't go around touting his middle class roots or any garbage like that. He's been there, done that, and he's fought his way back to the top. He's a survivor, and he's probably one of the most intelligent men in politics today. Just the things that he has been through, that he has seen, his logic. I mean, he is presidential from day one. And I just about texted a friend from Minnesota last night and said, how in the world did this goofball get elected to be your governor?
Because the goofball politics of Minnesota, too many of the voters have turned into such goofballs, embracing all this radical left nonsense. So it's a race to the far left, and Tampon Tim Walz has embraced the craziest of the crazy. Something you touched on there too. I think the thing about J.D. Vance is this guy is the real deal. He's had real American experiences. I think we've gotten so used to seeing so many of these phony politicians, and it's just phony bureaucrats in Washington, and all of this is just a game to so many of them. They're just a bunch of ladder climbers. They've never like done a real job in their lives. And so all they do is spew out these fake phony talking points. And then you got somebody like J.D. Vance. And frankly, back here in Montana, you got somebody like Tim Sheehy, a Navy SEAL veteran who's actually got some dirt under his fingernails, who's still working as an aerial firefighter as well. And so you get real people that speak real to the American people and don't just put out these phony political talking points like so many of these phony politicians out there. Hey, Tim, if you can, stand by. We'll come back to you right after the Farm and Ranch Report.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
There is no question that television news largely ignored, with some exceptions, the absolute devastation in western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee. But by Monday, perhaps feeling that they had botched it, that they had blown it, started covering it more intensively. Meanwhile, Donald Trump brought supplies when he went to a shelter in Georgia and read off note cards saying that this is not a time for politics. However, later in the day, he said, for example, that Georgia's GOP Governor Brian Kemp had not been able to reach Joe Biden. But Kemp told reporters he did talk to the president, who offered that if there are other things we need, to just call him directly. Biden said he's lying, and the governor told him he was lying. I don't know why he does this. I don't care what he says about me. I care about what this communicates to people who are in need. Politics, again. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
Here's a look at your real weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunshine across the region for today, high temperature readings will range from the lower 70s in Bozeman to the upper 70s in the Billings area. For tonight, clear and quiet. Mid-30s in Bozeman, around 40 in Billings. And then on Thursday, with more sunshine, temperatures cool off into the mid-60s for highs. Clear and quiet Thursday night. That's a look at your real weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
Coming up on Wednesday's Montana Talks, I'll be broadcasting live from Great Falls. I'll be at the Heritage Inn for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association annual meeting. Great folks from all across Montana always in the house, plus some big picture energy conversations that must be had. We'll get an update on the hydropower dams in the Pacific Northwest, plus what about small-scale nuclear? Montana Talks, live from Mecca in Great Falls, Wednesday, statewide, 9 to 10, right here.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordland.
American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval says America is bracing for the impact of the massive dock worker strike that threatens to paralyze goods in and out of the U.S. He points out that the nation relies on international trade for everything from electronics to machinery. Duval said, quote, families also count on the imports of foods like bananas, coffee, and specialty items. While there is a risk of shortages of some items, America is fortunate it can meet its nutritional needs without importing food. Duval added that America's farmers grow a diverse range of foods that help ensure the nation's food independence and grocery stores will remain stocked with domestically raised products. He says it's even tougher because the dock worker strike started at the same time the Farm Bill extension expired, and that farmers do meet the needs of American families with the help from the Farm Bill and now are working under a cloud of uncertainty. But the strike continues to highlight the importance of food independence and security in the United States. Looking to crop news, the early beet harvest is underway with 2% of the state's sugar beets harvested as of Sunday. That's 1 point behind the 5-year average. As for winter wheat planting, 61% of the crop is in the ground. That is well ahead of the 5-year average of 47%. Around 24% of the 2025 winter wheat crop has emerged as well. I'm Lee Northlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, well, we're going to go back quickly here to our friend Tim and Savage. That's what we know him as, our great caller, Tim and Savage. But many know him across the state as Tim Tharp, of course. Not only is he a pastor there on the Mondakistan border, but also a county school superintendent as well. He's worked in schools and smaller school districts all across from the Golden Triangle to Northeast Montana. In fact, I just saw some of our Westby Plentywood area friends here, Tim, just a few minutes ago. So it's fun getting here early at the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. But Tim, before I get to our next guest here, what else stood out to you? Was there a soundbite, a back and forth? What else stood out to you in this vice presidential debate last night?
I think just the biggest thing that stood out to me was just the tone. J.D. Vance looked presidential. I mean, that's what they're always, you see beforehand, they said, well, you know, vice presidential debates never make any difference. And it really doesn't matter. It's the top of the ticket is what really matters. But we all know, I mean, this person is a heartbeat away from assuming the presidency, or whoever is assuming the presidency right now, whether it's Dr. Jill or if it's Kamala or somebody else. But we know how important that is. And from the very first time I listened to JD's book, I said, that guy's got to be president someday. He just absolutely, we need somebody like that. And you talked about it earlier in the last segment there. He is so much like Tim Sheehy, a self-made man, came up, worked his way up, earned his way to the top, and has done a phenomenal job, and yet he ends up getting attacked by the left for it. And he wants to be able to give back and serve this country that has served him so well and be able to give of himself. And so that's the thing that came across to me. Which person do you want giving advice to the president of the United States? And it was just a clear. You got the calm, relaxed, and extremely intelligent J.D. Vance, or you've got the frantic, bug-eyed Tampon Tim from Minnesota, who just looked scared the whole time.
I was trying to think who Tim Walz reminded me of, like you said, with the frantic, bug-eyed look the entire time. And
Dangerfield. It's Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hey, Judge. Yeah, yeah. Or, but the look in his eye, he just had this kind of like dazed and confused look. It was like, was he like, I felt like he was a character from an Adam Sandler movie. Like, Like, I don't know if he was like, you know, the caddy from Happy Gilmore, you know, like the homeless guy caddy that just kind of wanders off at random points. You know, he's taking a bath in the pond in the middle of the golf game or something. Hey, but Tim and Savage, Tim Tharp, great to chat with you as always, my friend. Thanks for giving us your debate reaction. Always
have a great time
it.
And great calls.
Hey, I will. Thank you very much. Well, hey, we got another great guest. In fact, here having coffee this morning, former state senator Fred Thomas out of Stevensville, Montana. And Fred, I think you're on the board of Ravalli Electric Cooperative.
That's right.
These are elected board positions because yes. We all get to, those of us who are co-op members get to vote and make decisions about how our co-ops are run. So
that's exactly right. We have seven, and is most common, seven members of the board throughout the state. The local electric co-op that runs the operation for their members, and it runs well. Yeah. Runs well.
But in the 6 o'clock hour of the show, I was playing some of our, you know, caller reactions and in our commentary from the Senate race debate between Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy and Liberal Senator John Tester. You actually served with John Tester in the state Senate. What yes. stands out? What do you remember about John Tester from his state legislature days?
Well, you know, I served 24 years, but at least 4 or 6 of those years I served with John Tester, and I always liked him, no doubt about it. And he seemed to be kind of a moderate type in the Montana legislature back then.
Seemed to be.
And I remember the year, I think my last year when I was majority leader in that first go around, I remember. And John was the minority leader. I was majority leader. He was minority leader. And we were, I do remember this story where we were trying to remodel the income tax in Montana by cutting the top rates from 11 to 6.9 and cap gains from 11 to 4.9. Great piece of legislation. We did get it passed. And I really worked with many Democrats trying to get them to see this and support the legislation. And I wasn't successful in them coming over and voting for it, as they should have, in my opinion. But I worked with John Tester a lot, and John Ellingson, the minority leader, minority whip at that time. Good guy. And I always remember the end of that session, and it was that I was yakking with Senator Tester particularly. And he said, hey, I want you to know that if I weren't in leadership, the Democrats, I would have voted for that bill. And I didn't really say much to him at the time, but I thought, my goodness. So obviously leadership's more important than doing the right thing for Montana. And the trouble I have with that is today, you know, we saw John go to D.C. and I think loses Montana roots because he totally votes with this liberal junk back there. It causes inflation, opens the southern border. I mean, here's a guy with one vote could have said, look, I'm not supporting all this junk unless you close the border, really. One vote could have done all those things for us and stopped this horrific stuff they've done to this country. But it's more important to be there for him than to do the right thing for Montana. And that's sad. That's the same thing as it was in 2003 as it is today. And I hope Montanans will take that into light when they go and vote.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. So, back in the early 2000s, we did a great rewrite of our Montana tax code.
You had
a Republican governor at the time. And that really set up in good ways for some better economic times here in Montana. And so John Tester told you he would have voted for basically those tax cuts, that tax rewrite. But because he was in Democrat leadership, he couldn't vote for it. So even in his early days, he wouldn't vote the right way, even if he wanted to, because of Democrat leadership. And then here he has. He's been tied to the hip with Chuck Schumer the entire time in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it's really too bad because, you know, for Montanans today, we can't expect a better result in D.C., unless we send two good people back there to vote in the U.S. Senate for better results. And we have one in Senator Daines, but I'm sorry, Senator Tester just hasn't helped at all. in this last 4 years with Biden and Harris, it's a disaster.
Absolute disaster.
And it's all them doing it. It's not, it's on purpose. These things done to us with the inflation, the open border, the high mortgage rates, these are all intentionally done, you know, by
that,
them.
That point that you, you know, that point that you made about John Tester with one vote, he had all the power in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Because why did Kamala Harris have to, why did she set the record for tie-breaking votes? Because if there's a tie in the Senate, the vice president comes and casts the tie-breaking vote. Because John Tester voted with the Democrats on this radical stuff every single step of the way when it mattered the most.
Yeah.
And the Trump tax cuts, he voted against the Trump tax cuts. So those come up again next year. So he's obviously going to vote against the Trump tax cuts again.
He would do that. So the people get what I'm saying is that with 50 Democrats, he voted with them. He was that one vote. He could have voted no, or simply said, I'm not voting for this bill unless you, Harris and Biden, close the southern border.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you close the southern border, I'll reconsider my voting for this bill. One vote, his one vote could have turned the course of history in this country for the better. And he didn't do it. Not in one circumstance. Not in one circumstance.
And in that very point that you're making right now was the exact point made by a good Democrat by the name of Jimmy Keene out of Butte. Democrat State Senator Jim Keene out of
Butte. Good guy.
He co-authored a letter early on, I think it was in 2021, with John Brennan, former Republican State Senator out of Scobie.
You another good guy.
Him. And they said, John, you have the power in a 50-50 Senate.
Yeah.
This could be your Burton K. Wheeler moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, Burton K. Wheeler, senator back in the pre-dam days of Montana.
Right.
Use your power to get something done for Montana.
Yep.
And he has consistently failed to do that because he cared more about sucking up to party leadership.
Well, and I think the deal was made long ago that you vote the way we want you to vote back here, you know, the liberal socialist way, and we will send the tens of millions of dollars to Montana to reelect you.
Yeah.
That's the deal.
And that's exactly what's been happening. They're still flooding the state with tens of millions of dollars in phony ads. Former State Senator Fred Thomas and now voluntarily serving on the Ravalli Electric Co-op Board. But great to get your take as a former state senator this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
All right. We've got Mark Lambrecht coming up next. He is with the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association talking about wildfires, power lines, and more. This is very interesting information. You're going to want to hear this.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I got to check my Montana Talks app messages because I see we've got some more great messages rolling in here right now. Let me sneak a couple of those in here. Let's see, they go by the, this must be one of our Marine Corps veteran friends here because their nickname on our Montana Talks app, it came up as Crayon Eater. So I'm assuming it's one of our Marine Corps veteran friends from Billings. Tim Walls looked like a not funny Don Rickles from the side view last night. Tim and Savage was talking about how Tim Walls in the VP debate last night had the crazy eyed look, and he kind of looked like, who was that comedian? Hey, Judge! Kind of looked like that comedian. Let's see, Lori in Billings sent us a message last night, I think after the debate wrapped up. She says, I don't understand why, when Democrats say that Trump did not accomplish what he promised on building the wall, Republicans don't remind the public of the constant interference the Democrats, the Democrat-led Congress and their lawsuits did to stop Trump instead of helping. And what about Walz's comment about Trump on Xi and COVID? How'd Advance miss that whopper? So many lies from Tim Walz last night. That was what Lori and Billings had to say. All right, we're going to talk more, get more reactions to the VP candidate debate in the 8 o'clock hour of the show. Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter is going to come join us in the 8 o'clock hour. Plus, I want to get John Jackson's take on the VP debate last night, so he's going to pop in for a few minutes in the 8 o'clock hour as well. And then several guests from the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association who are in town here in Great Falls for their annual meeting will join us throughout the rest of the morning here. In fact, we've got Mark Lambrecht with us right now. He is with MECA, with the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. Mark, I should have your official. I think you're the government affairs director. Is that
That's right? Correct.
Okay, good. You and I talked briefly yesterday. The topic of wildfires, this is a major issue across the West in itself, but this could greatly impact our electric cooperatives here in the state, to where it sounds like it's about time for some state legislative action in the next legislative session.
Yes, it is. So I'm sure everybody's been keeping an eye on, you know, wildfires throughout the western states are increasing in frequency and in their intensity, and it has real impacts on utilities. So there was a jury award of over $1 billion in California assessed against that utility. Another one of nearly $100 million in Oregon, and even hit close to home here in Montana. There was a fire in June of 2021 over in the Deep Creek area east of Townsend, Montana. And about a year later, Vigilante Electric Cooperative, which serves that area, was sent a bill from the Forest Service for over $5 million to cover the entire cost of the agency's fire suppression efforts. It's come up quite a bit since then, over $6 million now with interest and penalties.
I remember that fire, too, because obviously, you know, the road, the highway there between basically White Sulphur Springs and Townsend was cut off. There was a hard landing of a helicopter, basically a helicopter crash that took place, and a heroic Montana Highway Patrol trooper drove in and pulled people out of the helicopter while it was on fire. So it was a very memorable fire, of course. But basically, it wasn't the electric cooperative's fault. The electric cooperative, give us more of the backstory here, because the co-op was doing everything they could to mitigate the wildfire risk. And it was the feds that were standing in the way, yet they want to send you a bill to pay for it.
Exactly. So the situation here was, it was a tree on Forest Service property that fell across the right-of-way for the power line. And the fire went from there. You know, we can argue about what the Forest Service's response was. They sat on the fire for a couple of days, and then the temperature went up, high winds, and the fire got out of control. But want to make sure all the listeners understand that all of the electric cooperatives and utilities are very vigilant about vegetation management along their power lines, making sure that we mitigate fire risk. So really started digging into this issue. And why would the Forest Service feel that they had the right to assess that kind of penalty against Vigilante? And so I started looking into federal law. And in federal law, under the Federal Land Policy Management Act, which governs the land management agencies, it actually has a strict liability component. So whether or not a utility started a fire, if they're involved, they're responsible. There are strict liability limits in the law that were established in 2018. So it's $1 million liability for a utility unless they have a updated operating plan or agreement, and it limits that liability even more. Vigilante did not have an updated one yet, so their liability should have been no more than $1 million, yet they're assessed this huge penalty.
And when we say that Vigilante is held liable, that means all of you electric ratepayers, you the customers, you the members of that co-op, you're the ones that are going to be held liable. You're the ones that are going to pay for that. And do I remember right that very tree that fell down,
that the vigilante actually tried to cut that very tree down to mitigate the wildfire risk, and the Forest Service told them no, but then now the Forest Service is trying to charge them $5 million for that tree falling down on their power lines?
That's my understanding.
My goodness.
And so the real problem there, as you mentioned, the members end up responsible for that penalty, but the real risk there is their insurance company would have to pay that, but then there's a real risk for utilities that they would not be able to be reinsured after a fire event like that and a large claim.
So not only will you have to pay potentially because of this strict liability clause, but then on top of that, your co-op could lose their insurance and not even have insurance as a result of something that likely wasn't even their fault when they were the ones trying to mitigate the risk.
Exactly. Yep. So I got a hold of the Montana delegation, and Senator Tester and Senator Daines have been really great about working on behalf of vigilante. I know Senator Tester had several conversations with the Chief of the Forest Service, the Secretary of Agriculture, and those keep falling on deaf ears. And so I decided we're going to do something about that. So I've been working with both Senator Tester and Daines on some federal legislation. Number one, that would extend those strict liability caps that are set to expire in 2028, make those permanent. And then also require the agencies to at least claim negligence and prove negligence if they're going to seek damages above those strict liability limits. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to get that legislation through. It's difficult to get anything through right now in Congress, but we're optimistic that in 2025 that we'll be successful in having some legislation attached to something that will move through Congress.
Is there any potential state legislative action that could take place as well? I mean, obviously the state legislature could pass a resolution expressing, you know, their, you know, opinion on the issue. But oftentimes what we've seen as well, where if we get a good law on the books at the state level, we can then use that state law to file a legal challenge against something crazy on the federal books as well. So I wonder if that could be an approach that could be taken as well.
Absolutely. So, we've been working on that with the investor-owned utilities, Northwestern Energy and MDU. We've been working for about a year now on some draft legislation that we'll introduce during the Montana legislative session in January. Other states are following suit. Wyoming and Idaho, Washington, Oregon, a lot of these other states are working on legislation as well. Utah passed a good bill. The basics of our bill is going to be that a declaration that strict liability does not apply in Montana. And so we're getting pretty aggressive on that. The other component will be establishing a standard of care. So utilities, if they develop a wildfire mitigation plan and comply with that and update that regularly, they will have some additional shield from negligence claims. So it'll be different between electric cooperatives and the investor-owned utilities. The wildfire mitigation plan for the investor-owned utilities will be filed with the Public Service Commission and so therefore be able to be reviewed by the public. And then for the electric cooperatives, since we're governed by our elected boards of trustees, that's where our plans will be filed. So it'll be an option for electric cooperatives and utilities to take advantage of that legislation and that negligence shield.
Well, and this is very interesting, too, because just last week or the week before, we had Jim Brown, who's a candidate for state auditor and who is chair of the Public Service Commission, president of the Public Service Commission right now. We were talking about homeowners insurance and wildfire risk. And here again, Montana should not be paying California premiums because California doesn't aggressively fight their fires. Montana's done a great job of aggressively fighting our fires from the state level. And so we shouldn't be paying California premiums for homeowners insurance, but yet we are. And so that's a fight Jim Brown wants to take on. But then now we see where, man, our electric cooperatives are being punished, even though they're doing the right thing and making the right decisions. And it's the feds, the Forest Service, that failed to do their job, yet they want us to pay for it time and time again. Fascinating insight. Mark Lambrecht here with Mecca in Great Falls. Stand by. We'll come back to you after this.
Revolutionary artist Pharrell Williams invites you to Peace by Peace. A first-of-its-kind LEGO Movie event.
What if we told my story with LEGO pieces?
Let's do it.
Discover what it takes to build the greatest hits with Kendrick Lamar, Jay-Z, Justin Timberlake, Pusha T, Gwen Stefani, and Snoop Dogg.
I was always a bad gangster, but you brought out the fun in me.
Hell yeah.
Peace by peace.
Get tickets now for Piece by Piece. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Directed by Morgan Neville. Only in theaters October 11th.
Fox News commentary.
A women's group plans to file a lawsuit against the Secret Service over its DEI initiatives. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
After the first assassination attempt of Donald Trump in Butler, PA, it was hard to look past those viral images of the female Secret Service agents present on that scene. The incident inspired a proposed lawsuit from the nonprofit group Independent Women's Forum against the Secret Service over what it alleges are the Secret Service's arbitrary diversity, equality, and inclusion initiatives they say harm female employees. The director of IWF says the agency's 30% female quota defies Title VII and the 14th Amendment, which prohibits employers from discriminating on the basis of sex. Secret Service's former director Kim Tuttle was known to take those DEI hiring quota practices very seriously. And while the IWF supports female involvement in law enforcement careers, the group also believes quota hiring practices actually hurt women and the work women do to earn their spots. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
I'm Gianna Gelosi with your Fox True Crime Minute. A woman in California charged with killing her mother and live streaming it on Facebook pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. 29-year-old Tanansen Beltran added the insanity plea to her original not guilty plea last week. In the live stream, she was seen stabbing her mother. Horrified viewers called police, who arrived at her home to find her in blood-soaked clothes holding the knife. The mother, Olivia Lucia Beltran Pacheco, was a respected community activist in Marin County. She was still alive when officers cuffed her daughter but died shortly after at a local hospital. The day of the stabbing, Beltran said in a now-deleted TikTok that she had gone to the Santa Rosa police station to retrieve her impounded car, where officers allegedly commented that she looked like she had some mental health issues. Another video she posted the same day showed Pacheco begging her daughter to calm down as she grew increasingly unhinged. The judge ordered a psych evaluation. There's more on this story at foxnews.com. Subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast with Emily.
Go check it out now. Just click over to crystalflesh.com.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio.
This is where Montana talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're back on here. I see we got a message from John in Billings on the Montana Talks app. He says, Tim Walz reminds me of Burgermeister Meisterburger. Yeah, is that the name? Remember the guy from the old Christmas movie, Santa Claus is Coming to Town? The grumpy, no heart, doom and gloom, anti-toy, anti-joy, town mayor of the town. That's pretty funny. That was a message that just came in on our Montana Talks app. Yeah, we're going to talk more about the VP debate coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But the real reason we're here is to check in with our friends from the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association here in Great Falls for their 63rd annual meeting. Man, I feel like I've been to at least a dozen of these Mecca annual meetings. Always great to be here and see all the fine folks from across the state. Mark Lambrecht is the government affairs director. Mark, more on this wildfire risk. This is such a big deal here. What are cooperatives, electric cooperatives, doing to mitigate fire risks? We saw with Vigilante, they did the right thing. The feds dropped the ball, but the feds are trying to punish us, the electric ratepayers here in Montana. But we do see where power lines, especially, you know, are obviously a risk when it comes to wildfires. So talk a little bit about what electric cooperatives are actively doing to mitigate that risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So, and I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to make sure the public understood, you know, how much investment and time cooperatives make into making sure that, you know, we minimize the risk of wildfire in these areas to protect the public. So each co-op takes this very seriously. They prioritize their power line corridors, taking a look at those, looking for any trees that might present a risk, taking those out, taking the tops off, making sure if they were to fall, they're not going to fall on a power line. There are several cooperatives that have invested in a technology called Overstory, which provides a satellite view of those corridors and help them prioritize where those risks are. And so you can imagine in Western Montana, where you have a lot of forested areas.
Now you can just do a map recon. You don't have to physically walk it.
Yeah, you get a heat map of, you know, here's, it gives you the crown height and the width and everything. So you get all of that information so you know where to send your crews out to eliminate that risk. And there are some cooperatives that are investing in additional technology that allows them to remotely shut off or de-energize a line when there are high risk situations occurring. So there's a lot of effort going and expense going on out there to make sure that we minimize any risk to the public.
Well, and I remember when Missoula had that massive windstorm blow through, the anticipation of that, you had power companies like Northwestern Energy, and I'm assuming the co-op as well. They said, okay, hey, we're going to have to shut down power here. And people are like, why are they shutting down power? Well, because those high winds coming through, they don't want to spark a massive wildfire, especially with high winds. And then you really have chaos going. So that's part of that mitigation of risk.
Yeah, it is. And that's a complicated issue, though, because on the one side of the coin, you want to be able to minimize that risk and de-energize the line. But de-energizing the line also creates problems on the other side of the coin, where you need to make sure that water availability doesn't become an issue. You're not shutting off power to, a nursing home or something like that, where people's lives could depend on
especially if they don't have backup generator power or something.
It
becomes a
complicated issue.
Yeah, no, great point. All right, looks like, man, we are already running out of time this hour of the show. 20 seconds to go. I'm going to talk more about the hydropower dams later, but with 20 seconds, what's the latest on the Pacific Northwest hydropower?
Yeah, the latest is the Federal Department of Energy is convening a study on the feasibility and the costs associated with breaching the four Snake River dams that we talked about previously. We're highly concerned about that. We're trying to make sure that Public Power has a representative on this steering committee to make sure that the facts about this case are considered.
All right.
But that we knew that was going to be the end goal, was breaching the dams.
Well, Mark Lambrecht, great to see you. Very interesting information. Thanks for joining us here in the early morning hours
of
the show.
Bullet points.
I'm Evan Brown. Guns and ammo are still legal in Okeechobee, Florida. The town in South Florida has drawn the ire of Second Amendment advocates as of recently, with Hurricane Helene coming and states of emergency being declared in a number of Florida counties. Okeechobee, the city, began posting signs saying the police chief, acting as emergency manager, was stopping sales of guns and ammo for a period of fewer than 24 hours. That prompted a lot of phone calls to Governor Ron DeSantis' office. End result is the order had to be rescinded. But the order was based on a real law, one that might have been misapplied. Florida's statutes do permit the governor, during a state of emergency, to suspend arms sales if violence and defiance of law enforcement are underway, which there wasn't in this case, though. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News. We'll